welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Aditya Asarat and his 2007 film Wonderful Town. Returning on the show today to talk about Wonderful Town is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
I'm going to be completely honest with you about this movie. This isn't over-exaggerating. I literally almost fell asleep while watching this movie. I got so bored, and it was at the night, so it was kind of late, so probably that didn't help either. And I was also like was watching it on my computer, and in the background my TV was on. They're showing some football, so I would just kind of, you know, look over, see what's going on there.
Upgrade if possible.
Yeah, upgrade. But man, this movie this happened a couple of times.
Yeah, the old whip back.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very it's a very slow movie. It's all atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going into it, when I read the little blurb about it, it said it was about rebuilding after the tsunami. So knowing how violent a tsunami is, you expect it to have a little more action, or at least a little bit more, maybe like a flashback, like how we got to this point, so that you can mm-hmm. get that sort of thrilling, oh my God, it's a natural disaster scene in there. But it's all aftermath.
Yeah.
And you don't even see any fresh debris. You know, it's all been pretty much cleaned up.
It's supposedly like, what, 2-3 years after the tsunami?
Yeah. So it's everybody's left. The only people who are still there are people who live there, and everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. And in comes this guy to make some money rebuilding a resort. Although it's interesting that they say to him, you know, they keep calling him City Boy and how you don't belong and you're not like us. You know, you're used to that fast track in the city. And he's always saying things like, yeah, but bigger isn't always better. And I like the laid back, you know, pace of life. So he looks like, seems like he could fit in if they would let him. But he doesn't ever blend in. You know, clothes-wise, the way he acts, the things that he does. He doesn't even seem to realize he's offending the locals by dating the woman who works at the hotel.
Yeah, and it takes forever for this story to just progress, move along. I was like 20 minutes in, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, it's going to pick up soon, right?
Well, I think
40 minutes in. Oh, it's going to pick up soon, right?
It never does, you know, go past that sort of idling. But it does try to reinforce this idea, at least with the woman who works in the hotel, the sameness and the banality and the drudgery of her life. Because there's a whole lot of scenes of hanging up laundry and taking down laundry. Although what I think is funny mm-hmm. is, you know, she keeps talking about, oh, these are my personal things. There's nothing personal drying. It's all sheets and towels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they make sure to make the audience sit through all of those
scenes. A lot of the scenes of the taking down and the putting up with the laundry. But I think that was intentional. I think that was meant to show mm-hmm. the sameness and the, you know, sort of basicness, you know, the things you have to do just to live. You know, you have to have a place to stay, you have to have a place to sleep, and somebody maintains mm-hmm. that. You know, she's just sort of that sort of baseline person those things.
The storyline really is just very, very simple. Guy goes into town, falls in love with a woman. A lot of the locals don't like that. That's pretty much the entire movie. And it's like you said, it's which is what kind of makes it feel like Terrence Malick film. Terrence Malick film.
Well, it has a couple of other tropes in it. One of them is the librarian. You know, she's got her hair in a bun and she was wearing mm-hmm. glasses, so she's completely forgettable. And then at some point in the movie, she takes off the glasses, lets down her hair, and all of a sudden, oh my God, who knew you were such a beauty? They do that sort of with this woman who you believe she's falling in love with this man because she continually like gets better looking as the movie goes on. You know, she shops for a headband, and by the end of the movie, her hair is down. When the beginning, it's in a mm-hmm. ponytail. She wears cuter clothes. She's sort of blossoming until the end when he's taken away from her. And then she kind of goes back to drab. But it's like mm-hmm. for a moment, she let herself believe that she could escape. And she even says something about, he's talking about how beautiful the place is. And some of the images are beautiful when they're on the bicycle and the mountains rise behind them. They're very, very lovely, especially when you think this was an area completely devastated, you know, a couple of years ago. That's notable, but it never kind of goes past that idea. Yes, okay, so she falls in love with this man, and then it just sort of comes to an ending you don't expect.
Yeah, and another, like I was saying, Terrence Malick, like where you talk about with Malick films, even some of the films from his I don't like, it's always very beautifully shot. It's very atmospheric, lots of shots, like I call it nature porn, mm-hmm. where it's look at this water, look at these trees, look at these animals. And this is, once again, feels a lot like this, where even the, because there's a lot of like in-between scenes, basically, where it's, now we're moving here. Let's watch this wave. Let's watch these trees.
You know? And I think some of the things are visually meant to be sort of almost like paintings or like reinforcing an idea that's very, very subtle. Like we were talking about the mountains in the distance, very beautiful. But on the rooftop where we see laundry being taken up mm-hmm. and put down many, many times, there's a brick wall kind of between you on the roof and the beautiful scenery. So it is sort of an idea that even though it's right there, there's something in the way of the man who wants to live there being able to stay. And even her sense of, she says, well, you know, there's the sea on one side and there's the mountains on the other side and I feel trapped. So even when she's hanging up the laundry, the sameness, there's this brick wall that is actually also in the way of actually just experiencing the mountains in all their beauty. I also noticed there was a lot of repeating kind of film noir kind of things with blinds and shadows and reflections in puddles and things like that, which I thought was good because it gave you this sense of foreboding. I had the feeling the whole time watching it that something was not going to turn out right because of all of the noirish touches. Does have a lot of noirish feelings to it, which I thought led into that feeling of foreboding that something wasn't going to end happily ever after.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. You can almost say it's a bit of a Western. You know, stranger rides into town. This place that's been, it's sort of because of something has been, you know, sort of lawless, a bit of lawlessness. And, you know, the locals are immediately against him, you know, something kind of like a Western.
Well, you know what was interesting, though, about the everybody knows everybody thing is that there's these punk kids on bikes. Mm-hmm. And the girl is like, oh, they're locals. They're just kids. And he's like, do you know them? And she's like, no. So how do you know that they're local? Yes, everybody knows everybody, but nobody really knows anybody.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know when somebody doesn't belong, but you don't really know anybody. Like you wouldn't be able to say, well, you know, that kid is not supposed to be out this late and I'm going to call his mother. Not like that kind of knowing. Or good even, point. You know, calling one of the kids out by name saying, what's going on?
And since we talk a little bit about how it somewhat reminds us of a Terrence Malick film, another director I feel that this reminds me of is Hirokazu Koreeda.
Mm-hmm.
Did I pronounce that right?
Koreeda, yeah.
Great
Koreeda.
Points. But we talked about him a while ago mm-hmm. with
Afterlife,
which I thought was a fantastic movie. I want to thank you for almost introducing me to him because that was the first film of his I've seen. And since then, I've gone on a little bit of a binge watching his other works. I've seen Nobody Knows, Still Walking, Our Little Sister, I Wish, and there's one. Oh, After the Storm.
Wow, you've seen more than I have.
So, like, yeah, because I love all of his movies.
He taps into a sweetness, doesn't he?
Exactly. And that's what I want to get to with this film, because he kind of has, like, these little slice-of-life moments. Somebody's in a little town, like Our Little Sister. Last one I watched, I thought was really good. Little Sister, they find out that women find out that they have this younger sister from the father, that they kind of left him. It's been a while since I've seen it. But anyway, they befriend her, and they take her in as one of their own. And it's this very sweet story, and they sort of, at little moments, you learn a lot more about the little sister that they didn't know and what went on with their father during the final years of his life. It's a really good movie. He always has a little bit of heart, and the stories, mm-hmm. His movies aren't, you know, they're not fast-moving. They're pretty slow, but you don't care because right. he develops the characters. He makes you care about them. This is a movie something like this. I could see him doing some movie like this. Small town, there's been a natural tragedy, guy moving in just for some little job, befriends and falls in love with a woman who works at the hotel he stays at. I can see him doing a movie like this, but he would make you care about the characters, to develop the story, make you understand them. Let's see, with this movie, you don't really do that. And like once again, like I wrote down, it feels like a Kurosawa film without the heart and humanity.
Right. Like there's a missing layer with the brother. There's a missing layer with the nephew. All kinds of opportunities where they could have fleshed these characters out. But you're thinking the whole time, well, you know, we're focusing on the couple because it's their story. But it's a sad story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read a lot of reviews and people discussing the film online because I was trying to figure out what that ending was supposed to mean.
Oh, wait,
where he gets that phone call.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was something like he had a wife and he abandoned?
Well, that's one theory. The other theory is that he's finally talking to the father from whom he's been estranged. But it's not, we don't know. We never really find out. All of a sudden, you're left wondering, wait a minute. Is he not a good guy? Is he about to take off and leave this girl hanging? Because he said, when I come back to the hotel, I'm going to bring you a surprise. What was the surprise? Yeah.
And then and none of that even matters anyway, because he gets beaten up, spoiler alert, but he gets beaten up and killed probably by the gang. And so, kind of, what was the whole point of that thing anyway?
Well, one of the remarks that I read said that it's something very Eastern, that there's a lot of telepathy going on between the characters that we're supposed to understand, but we don't, because we don't have the right sensibility. Okay, fine. That's not really helpful for a Western audience because you don't even know what you're supposed to be looking for. But another person said about the storyline that it was really about the girl wanting her brother back. And in the end, she did get him back because now that, you know, he needed her, quote unquote, to help him run that hotel, he could get out of being a gangster. So there was the boyfriend was sacrificed in order that she would have an intact family at the end. I thought that was a bit of a stretch because we weren't really led to sympathize with the brother or have any sort of indication that that was something that the sister wanted.
Yeah, and you know, funny that you've been saying that this is the brother. Shows how much this movie's been able to stay in my brain. I thought that was like her boyfriend or somebody, or like an ex or something, because the first time we see him, he goes, "What are you doing with this guy?"
Yeah.
Like, I assumed, like, oh, they're a couple, or oh, they used to be a couple or something. He's jealous that she's seeing somebody else. And, like, no, it's the brother. I didn't even get that at all. And, like you said, I didn't even know he was in
the gang.
That bike gang was harassing.
He was behind it, yeah. Which is sort of
interesting. It took me a while to get that, because it wasn't until the end when they arranged to have the guy killed that I even know. I was like, wait, he's in that gang? I thought he was just like this guy.
I think there was a little bit of misdirection, so you would question what she was all about, because you wondered about the kid, too, until the boyfriend asks her about the kid. She's like, oh, that's my nephew. But for a while there, you're going, wait a minute, does she have a kid? Is that her kid?
Yeah, that's actually, you're talking about the nephew. That's another thing I wrote down in my notes, is plots that don't go anywhere. It's like the nephew. It's like she takes care of him. Like, is that her? You know, I was thinking, like, is that really her kid and she's just lying? Or, okay, we could develop that a little bit. But no, once again, that's another thing that just doesn't go anywhere, and then you're just left asking, well, what was the point of having that in the first place?
Yeah.
Kind of like a Terrence Malick movie.
Terrence Malick movie. I did think it was interesting that, you know, part of the dating sequence that they show them sneaking around and everything showed a lot of standard stuff. You know, you go on a picnic, you put your head in somebody's lap, and you talk about how you wish you could be together and all, why we need to stop sneaking around and all of that stuff. But, you know, one of the things they do is ride around on the motorcycle. Mm-hmm. So that's the symbol of freedom. She's on the back of this motorcycle. Nobody's wearing a helmet, by the way. And, of course, her hair is streaming in the breeze. It's that romantic image. Mm-hmm. You know, James Dean, right? But later, motorcycles are like now the ominous thing.
Yeah.
Now there's four of them. Now these kids are threatening. And the guy who comes in, the architect, he's sort of an interesting character. You don't know really what the rift was with his family back wherever he's from. It's interesting that he says he's the only one who took the job because he was the only one who, quote unquote, had 2 months to waste somewhere.
Yeah. And like you said, you see it with that phone call.
Yeah.
And I wish that something would have been just resolved a little bit with that storyline.
Right. Either give us another clue earlier that was coming and you were worried it would, or tell us what it was. I think it was just meant to make you wonder whether he deserved to die.
Yeah. And another thing that I took me a while to get was that this film took on the backdrop of the 2004 tsunami. And it's like they really don't even mention it until like there's like 20 minutes left in the movie. So you spend most of the movie like not really paying attention. Like, well, I was like, well, what's with this town? Why is it so abandoned? I thought it's just like there are more jobs somewhere else.
Oh, you were probably snoozing, because when the architect shows up, he talks about him being there to rebuild a resort by the beach.
Yeah,
and that
I knew that, but I didn't. Did they directly address this is because of the tsunami that hit?
I think they do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it shows how much. Was...
Well, you know, one of the reasons I chose this movie is because of the wonder theme, but. You know, of course, I found it because I was doing a search for movies with wonder in the title. And since it was from Thailand, and since it was about an area and a theme that, you know, we don't usually watch, sometimes it's good to pick movies like that because people won't have seen it. And it does make you think, and it does give you a little bit of armchair traveler kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've always been, Thailand has, you know, I don't think people talk about it much as far as a film country. Because you have this. I mean, I've only seen a handful. One of the things probably I best know it for is the Tony Jaa movies. Tony Jaa is a huge martial arts star. It's probably two best known films he did in Thailand were called Ong Bak, The Thai Warrior. And then another one was called The Protector. And they're amazing. I don't know if you're how big you are on martial arts movies, but he is one of the best martial arts there. He does Muay Thai style. And man, those and he's awesome in those movies. The once again, there's a lot of stunt work, you know, perfectly filmed action. It's not like cut to death like we would do it here. The Protector has like this famous. Notice how I'm talking about other movies, so I don't have to talk about this one. But like,
you're talking about Thai movies.
Yeah, so I figured, oh, what the hell? It's close enough. And like, there's this amazing long take in The Protector that's very famous. He's trying to get. An elephant in this movie has this elephant that's been taken from him because in Thailand, elephants are very, you know, respected and sacred. And he's got to get it from these poachers. So he goes into this building where the poachers are and he's climbing up the stairs and all these guys are trying to attack him. And he's beating them up and throwing them off the stairs. It's awesome. Holly, if you're into martial arts movies, check out Tony Jaa and a lot of the stuff he did in Thailand.
I do like seeing well-done martial arts.
Mm-hmm. And then another film from Thailand, because once again, I don't really want to talk about this movie much anymore. A film that came out last year, I think, is a little underseen gem. It's called Bad Genius. It's it's sort of like a heist movie. It's like teenagers, and one of them is like this incredibly talented girl, and she's friends with kind of these popular kids. And they have to take all these standardized tests and everything. And to do that, they can get into like really prestigious universities, not only in Thailand, but across the world. Like one later on, they're trying to get to like Harvard or Yale or whatever. But they realize that they create this system where they can where she can give all the answers to everybody. And it's not at first, it just starts out with her friend, and then it gets out to other people in the school. And then by the end, she's got like this network that spans across the country. It's really a fun movie. Really good tense situations. It's a really good movie. I highly recommend Bad Genius.
Okay, I'll have to look for that one. Didn't they make a movie about the tsunami itself?
Yeah. Are you talking about the one? I don't remember the name of it.
I can't think of the name of it either.
Tom Holland's in it. I think Naomi Watts is in it. I don't remember. But yeah, it was about like an American
movie.
Family that was like having a vacation at that time.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I also would only recommend a movie where you watch a beautiful place be completely destroyed and have that represent the entire output of the film industry. Wasn't there also a Leonardo DiCaprio movie set in like the beaches near Phuket?
Yeah, The Beach, actually. That's
the
what
beach?
It's called.
The
yeah,
Beach.
With Tilda Swinton.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of good movies from Thailand. And it's interesting when you recommended this movie. It's a really hard film to find. Because when I typed in Wonderful Town on Google, usually when you recommend me films, even if something I've seen, when I type it in, it's the first thing that'll show up. And like this one was like, did you mean Wonderful Town the play or this 1958 movie that came out? And I was like, nope, I don't think that was it. It took me a while to actually find Wonderful Town. It was a film, I even just read emails. Like, is this the one from 2007 to make sure? And it was a hard film. Like usually on websites I do completely legally and definitely do not torrent because that is a bad thing.
That's bad.
Bad thing. I couldn't find it. I'm like, oh boy, are we gonna have to, am I gonna have to tell her that I can't do it? I actually had to was lucky because I don't know if because you're Howard County, right?
Right.
The library, I don't know, I'm Anne Arundel and our library system has this thing called Canopy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was found on Canopy. I was like, whew.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I know. I actually I watched it completely legally, like I always do
like
for all these movies. Yes.
Yeah, it is a little hard to find. I don't think it had any sort of release here.
Doing some research, it played at a few film festivals, and apparently, like, if you look at, like, the Rotten Tomatoes, there's a bunch of critics who've reviewed it, and most of them actually gave it good reviews.
Yeah, I think that's because it does have this very languid feel to it, but it is sort of fun. It does have its unexpected moments, and the cinematography is pretty solid. There's also a kind of a nice quote from the architect when he's talking to the girl. She doesn't understand why he doesn't enjoy it more in town. And he says, no people are a lot of people. It's the same. I think that was an interesting way to talk about loneliness. You can be surrounded by people and still be lonely. You can be all alone and be lonely. That's what he's saying. No people, lots of people. It's the same. I thought that was a profound moment. There was lots of little moments like that. If you listened, she was kind of intimating that he must be, you know, pretty well off. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, you know, the boss designs the hotel. I just do the toilets. You know, it's humble. He is, of all the characters, he is the most well-drawn and likable. And yet you realize at the end you don't really know who he is at all.
Yeah. He's definitely the one you can relate to the most because he is this person alone, but he still strikes up this relationship with the Na, the woman who runs the hotel. And it's a very sweet relationship. He's not just trying to get something out of her. He's actually has a romantic interest in her.
Yeah, that seems genuine. It just it doesn't seem like a use.
Yeah. And just if we were asking earlier, that Naomi Watts movie is called The Impossible.
The Impossible.
From 2012. It's got her. It's got Ewan McGregor and Tom Holland, a.k.a.
Ewan McGregor.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, looking at the director, usually at a point in this film, it's like, so we could talk about the director and his stuff they've done. Like, oh, there's this movie. His name is Aditya Asarat, hope I pronounced that right. And I was looking, he's done a couple of other movies, but like you look at it, like you look on IMDb, your typical movie gets like 1,000 or so votes, like something based on 1,000 votes, whether it's 6 or 7 or whatever. There's his other stuff, it gets like 50 votes. Like, it means I'm assuming you haven't seen any other films he's
done. No, I haven't. I mean, he's really kind of new, you know, kind of emerging.
Yeah, but like he's done a couple movies since then. And like, once again, it's just like nobody's rated him. Like, I remember when we talked about that Irish film Jump, I was telling you, like, man, nobody's talked about this film. It's got like, you know, 300 votes, which hardly means anybody's seen it. His stuff gets like half of that. And I wonder why, because this, like I said, this film got some release in America, played at some film festivals, and I'm kind of curious as to why that it's just not, he hasn't really released his other stuff in America, and his stuff hasn't been getting further exposition.
It's probably publicity. You know, those 50 people were probably everybody that he knows, every family member that he knows. Yeah, it's really kind of hard to say. Like I said, I don't think it got much release here, and if it did do film festivals, they were probably hoping to get a distributor, but didn't.
Yeah.
But this is a film festival kind of a movie.
Definitely.
You know, it's harder to watch than, you know, you have to be looking for things.
I can see it's one of those films that you can see yourself, you know, smoking a pipe, putting a beret on, you know, and saying, I've seen a foreign film. Now I'm intellectually superior to
That's
you.
That's right.
You
know? Yes, me and my jacket with my suede arm patches. Yes. It's all going to be okay.
Because that's what you do as a film buff, you know? You watch foreign movies, and then you feel better about yourself. You feel smarter.
Yes.
Especially people who don't watch foreign films.
Especially if you don't really get it. You're sitting
who
there
cares
thinking,
if you don't get it? You've seen a foreign film.
That baffled me. I think I'm a better person.
Yeah, they don't speak English. I'm obviously smart. You know, there's a bunch of memes. It was like me after watching one foreign film, and it says, you know, I'm something of a filmmaker myself.
Well, you could say that after seeing Birdemic.
Okay. Anything else? Getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything else about movies from Thailand or this movie that you want to bring up?
Well, let's say, you know, since we are budding filmmakers ourselves, how would you have ended this movie differently?
I would have had some sort. I would have made sure to give us a bit of heart to the story. I would have had them at least a scene or two where they discuss what happened at the tsunami, how what happened mm-hmm. in the town. I would have had them build on the relationship a little bit better. I would have given more of that, at least an answer or two to the backstory of the character of Tan. You get all of that. You don't have the – and explain why all of a sudden they want to kill this guy. Mm-hmm. You get about that, the movie I think would have been better. Like I said, if you put the heart in it, you could have really had like something like Kurieda film. They don't – that's how I would have done it and ended it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I also would have liked to have known the what the – either make the phone call more obvious what it was mm-hmm. by the end of the movie or make it completely – vague, like you see him on the phone with somebody, and then you don't even know what who he called. It just raises more questions than it answers.
Yeah, and you know, just now that you're thinking about it, the film that kind of has like a phone call at the end that sort of changes your perception on a character reminded me of a film from the 70s called Scarecrow. It's got Gene Hackman and Al Pacino in it. I'm not going to spoil it for you if you haven't seen it. I do highly recommend it because it's a really good movie. But Al Pacino makes a phone call because he's sort of seen as this goofy guy who's sort of like a tramp on the road with Gene Hackman. And then he makes a phone call to somebody, and then your perception of him completely changes, I think. And that in his character, after he gets that phone call, completely changes. And it's a really powerful scene. In that phone call, which leads into this one, you 100% know what his backstory is, so you understand it. And that makes the following scenes more impactful. Like you said, in this movie, you go, maybe there's, I thought, like, I assumed it was a, like, he's a father leaving the family, but you've heard other people theorize that it's like his father or something. So if they made it a little bit more obvious and explored it a little bit more and you felt the impact instead of, never mind, he's dead anyway, I think that would, yeah.
Because it does matter, because it means if he is talking to a wife and he does have a child, he lied, because she asks him if he has any kids and he says, oh, do I look that old? I'm not old enough to be a father. Mm-hmm. So it does change everything if depending on who he's talking to. You know, another phone call that changes everything movie moment is the last scene in The Usual Suspects.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where you suddenly realize where the penny drops. Mm-hmm. You need that in a movie like that, or you've done all that buildup for nothing.
Definitely. All right. Then this is part, we talked a little bit about this is part of the Wonder event, so go ahead and plug the Wonder event.
The Wonder event is that Wonder is the theme this season for Horowitz Center. So the International Film Week will include movies with the word wonder in the title that have to do with wonder and are wonderful. Mm-hmm. Maybe not this town.
No. But yeah, and if you get to see this movie, I recommend if you're in the line of me, you bring a pillow,
take a nap first,
maybe get some sleeping pills or something. It's gonna be a long day, folks.
Don't watch football at the same time.
Yeah,
it cannot just compete with football.
Just like have football on your laptop or something. Like okay.
And you know, it does end with like the tide coming in or going out. So you know, repeats that idea of. But now it's a gentle tide. It's not a destructive tide.
All right. All right, then tell us about your classes.
Next semester, because we're almost at the end of fall semester here, next semester I will be teaching Intro to Film, World Cinema, and Women in Film, all on Tuesday. It's going to be a really long Tuesday.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing director Aditya Asarat and his 2007 film, Wonderful Town. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragonnigilradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Tune in to Dragon Digital Radio to hear the show a week before it's on Podbean. West to West Day, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying so long, and we will see you next week.